Meeting of Parliament, Monday the 21st of December 2020. The Honourable, the Minister for the Environment, Sustainability, Climate Change and Education. Mr. Speaker, I propose that the House do recess until 3:30, at which time the Chief Minister will be making a statement. The House will now recess until 3:30. Suspension of standing orders. The Honourable the Chief Minister. Mr. Speaker, I beg to move under standing order 7.3 to suspend standing order 7.1 in order to proceed with a government statement. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? Carried. Mr. Speaker, members of the and to all those listening today. I'm grateful for the continued indulgence of all members of this House as we continue to suspend session and after session as the government works to tackle the many challenges facing the community today. First of all, Speaker, I'm that we are down two members of this Parliament who are positive with the COVID infection. The Deputy Chief Minister, the Honourable Dr. Jordan Garcia, who is diagnosed with positive yesterday evening. And additionally, the Honourable Mr. Golden Bosino, who has been in isolation and diagnosed as positive for some days now. The House will be very pleased to know that I'm in touch with both of them and both are well. For which them both, no doubt, are both in the room. As listening to Speaker, we have two members of the Parliament who are in self-isolation. The Honourable Mr. Edwin Sayers and the Honourable Minister Samantha Sabalenka, who is the Minister for Health and Justice, acknowledging me that Minister Sabalenka continues in full charge of her ministry's life self-isolating. Mr. Speaker, I wish to begin by placing on record my apology to the community as a whole for once again having to escalate measures that relate to COVID. I had certainly hoped not to have to address this community once more in this regard, especially as recent weeks have provided us with a faint glimmer of hope with news about vaccines, that we were in fact rounding the corner. But we are where we are and we must. So let me set out exactly where we are. It is clear to anyone who has read a newspaper or switched on any news channel in the past 24 hours that the United Kingdom and Europe are once again plunged into a renewed public health crisis arising from corona. A new, more infectious, but not more deadly, strain of the disease appears to have emerged. I do not need to take the House through the scientific aspect of it. The key issue is that the rate of infection is in the region of 70% more virulent. It is a result of this, Mr. Speaker, that it's clear that we're seeing infection rates rocket in the United Kingdom. Like every other EU country, we cannot say with certainty that the new strain is in Gibraltar in earnest or that it is not. I can tell the House, however, that it appears that one patient manifested with the new variant in November, but that we appear to have shut down that particular vector. It's also not clear that other vectors of the new variant will not be present in Gibraltar, or indeed in the rest of Southern Europe, or Europe as a whole. What is clear, Mr. Speaker, is that the old and new strains of COVID-19 have found, at least in Gibraltar, a new ally. The most powerful ally that a virus can find. Apathy and irresponsibility. Apathy and irresponsibility in very few, but having an effect on very many. And that is what will light the path for the infection to the many who are now laboring under its effect. The majority, of course, will have been entirely responsible people who have not been assisted by those who have thrown caution to the wind and then brought the virus into the lives of others. Happily, most people are only mildly afflicted. A few, however, will be very badly affected. Unfortunately, some of the latter may end up suffering the most lethal effects of the virus, that is, death. We have already suffered death with COVID in this community. We would not want to suffer anymore. But I fear, Mr. Speaker, that we will. The results developed last week also the numbers of new infections increased quite dramatically. On the 10th of December, we had 47 active cases. On the 11th of December, we had 41 active cases, down 6. On the 12th of December, we had 39 active cases, down another 2. And on the 13th of December, we had 37 active cases, down 2 again. Yet on the 15th of December, we had 60 active cases, up 22. On the 16th of December, we had 71 active cases, up 11. And today, Mr. Speaker, 35 days later, we are up at 202 cases. That is an extra 131 cases. In 5 days, we have gone from 71 to 202. Our confirmed cases are up 38 on yesterday. And that's on half the number of tests that we usually carry out. So yesterday, there were less than 500 tests. Usually, there were about 1,000 plus tests. One of those 38 is a non-resident. The total number of confirmed cases in Gibraltar today, sorry, the total number of cases of confirmed infection in Gibraltar today in total is 1,282. One-fifth of those almost are active now. The total number of applications in Gibraltar, I told you, there is 202. 4% of those have recovered since yesterday. Out of the 37 residents who are found to have been infected today, 20 were close contacts of previously diagnosed infectees. There are now 1,365 persons in self-isolation in Gibraltar. 6 days ago, that number was 222. That growth is clearly becoming exponential. On Friday, I received reports of restaurants fully booked and the numbers again reported reaching new record levels of infection. We had no alternative but to. We were facing the potential for a full lockdown if we did not, and we wanted to avoid a full lockdown if possible. So we acted to close all catering establishments for the hour. We did so, Mr. Speaker, as the Honourable Minister for Justice and Health told the House on Friday with a very, very heavy heart. And as I've already said, we will compensate all those who followed our COVID rules in the catering industry. We've already prepared a claim form which has been sent to the head of the Catering Association for discussion. I'll be meeting with him later this evening to further discuss the measures introduced on Friday, and the further measures I will refer to later in my address in the second week. We're also, of course, committed to addressing compensation for the sector. But I want to be clear, Mr. Speaker, we will compensate those who have complied with our COVID rules. And thus, we will not compensate those who have defied our rules. Those very few who sought to put profit over public health, they will be specifically excluded from receiving benefits. After Friday, as numbers continue to increase, we've seen great pressure on our services on testing and sampling, on 111 and on the contact tracing bureau. For that reason, in consultation with the teachers union, we took the decision to close our schools 2 days early, leaving the schools open only for those children whose parents could not make other arrangements in time. In fact, the information I have from the Minister for Education is that we have had only in the region of 20 children in each of our primary schools, and 9 and 10 respectively in each of our comprehensive schools. But now, we must act more generally also. And we must do so despite the coming festive period, and because of the coming festive period. The potential damage that could be done by a more virulent strain of the virus, combined with the social interaction we can expect to see in Gibraltar over a traditional Christmas period, is obvious. And so, Mr. Speaker, the following new measures will apply with effect from tomorrow. As from midnight tonight, masks should be worn in every public place. The new strain of the virus requires us to take this step now. Mask wearing will only be exempted for those with conditions that require it, and when a person is exercising by running or cycling, but not when exercising by walking. As from 7 p.m. tonight, all catering establishments will have to remain closed until at least Monday the 11th of January. This period may be further extended. Exceptions will be made for takeaway and for delivery services. As I've already said, the government will be funding the losses in the industry in a number of different ways for those who have complied with all COVID regulations. Again, I also want to be clear that those who have not complied with all COVID regulations will not be compensated. Restrictions will apply on entry and movement in all retail establishments also. We are not shutting down non-essential retail, but we are putting in place the same systems we put in place in April when we started to come out of lockdown. Tight control on the numbers in shops, tight controls on timing on entry and exit from shops, and tight controls designed to allow us to keep the retail open for now. All gyms will be closed from tomorrow. We will try to reopen them as soon as possible. All permits for other sports are cancelled from tomorrow. That will include the polar bear swim and any other organised activity. It is the government's strong advice that only 3 households should mix at Christmas in family homes. This is strong advice which I urge all members of our community to follow. We will not legislate to police this. We will not have police officers put in the invidious position of having to determine how many households are mixing. But members of the community must police themselves. Please, because we are doing this for them, for our families. I turn now to the rules that will govern our over 70s. We will not lock down our over 70s. But please remember that our greatest success against this virus was the over 70s lockdown. But I do not believe that we are able to legislate effectively or legitimately for such a legal lockdown of our over 70s now. The government's strongest advice in terms of just short of legislation is that our over 70s should act as if they were legally locked down. Golden Hour is therefore cancelled until at least Monday the 11th of January. Our over 70s should stay home unless they need to move for work or for any other emergency or necessity. We will bring you what you need, but please stay home. We understand how difficult this will be. They will not see all of their loved ones. I know their love feels more precious than life itself, but you can only know their love if you are alive to see it. Please, I urge our over 70-year-olds not to allow a lunch date to get in the way of your continued existence. Please do not go to your children's home for Christmas lunch. Do not go to your relatives. Stay home. I know that this is sad, especially at Christmas, but the alternative is worse. It is lonelier than a coffin. We are talking to all of the religions to have all in-person worship canceled. We will provide alternative forms of worship through the public broadcaster as we did in the first lockdown. GBC has already confirmed arrangements to broadcast Midnight Mass from the Vatican in Rome, and other arrangements will be made for the rest of the relevant period. I am sure, Mr. Speaker, that our respective deities do not wish to see any of us sacrifice our lives in worship. So I ask everyone in this community, please not to leave home to go to collective worship. Schools will not likely reopen on Thursday the 7th of January, but maybe on Monday the 11th of January. Parents should be ready to make arrangements now in case they do not. We may have to stay closed for a week or two more. arrangements will be made for digital teaching systems to operate as they have today for as long as necessary in the following week. I shall say more about that and other arrangements on the 27th of December when I will hold a live press conference in 6 Common Place at 4 p.m. The speaking respect of workplaces. All persons who can should start working remotely as from tomorrow. If anyone can, they should please stay at home and away from work completely over the Christmas break. There should also be no socializing in workplaces. I know that this is the last thing that people want to hear. It is the last thing that I want to say. But I ask them to please understand why we are doing this. Please, individuals should not organize parties or gomelonas, as they are known this year, at their places of work. In doing so, they could be creating unnecessary vectors for infection, and they could end up being responsible for the growth of persons infected and the growth of potential fatalities. If you cannot work from home, tight restrictions will be put in place about workplace behavior through COVID-19 offices in each workplace. We strongly encourage moving to Team A and Team B working systems in each workplace. The public sector will be adopting that stance in respect of all utilities and all public services. On Air Link, we will work with the Department of Transport in the United Kingdom and continuation of Air Link with Britain in a mutually agreed, safe and secure way that permits the movement of persons and goods between us. We will require arrivals from London to show a current negative test for COVID taken no earlier than the 3 days before arrival, or the option will be available to take a rapid test at the airport. We will not impose restrictions on travel to Spain, but the Spanish government has announced a moment ago that their measures against the United Kingdom will include the imposition of reinforced control at the frontier between Gibraltar and Spain. In the end, Mr. Speaker, I am calling on our people, especially our young people, not to go to Spain to do the things that they cannot do here. There are many of our people who have their homes or their second homes in Spain who do not want to restrict their plans to move within their homes. And my heart goes out to the young people who will feel that they cannot socialize as they wish to this Christmas. But the young have to spare a place in their hearts for the effect that their actions can have on the elderly. Mr. Speaker, in view of the significant threat to CHA preparedness arising from the increase in numbers we have seen to date, and to deal further with a potential rapid rise in the number of admissions that we are likely to see arising from them, and for the safety of patients and the safety and resilience of DHA staff, the Minister for Civil Contingency for Sport and I have agreed that we should declare a major incident in the GHA. The organisation has therefore today increased its posture to major incidents. This means that only priority surgeries, interventions, investigations and outpatient appointments will take place. Routine surgeries and appointments will once again have to be postponed until such time as it is safe for patients to come back into the hospital. This also means no visitors to any GHA premises. All GHA staff leave is canceled, and staff are being actively recalled to work or redeployed to other departments. We are gearing up now also, once again, for the reopening of Nightingale. I am also sorry to say that ERS visits are now closed again unless there are end-of-life issues. So in summary, Mr. Speaker, our advice as from today is to stay home. Work from home if people can. Go out only if you have to. This is not what we want to announce, especially in the run-up to Christmas, but it is what we have to announce. Mr. Speaker, no one dies from missing a Christmas party. No one dies because they weren't able to go out to shop for the present they wanted to give to a loved one. No one dies from not having a drink with friends or workmates. A or vulnerable or elderly person may die if we do not follow these rules. And that is why we are doing this, to protect the vulnerable. Because we are now in a race, literally to the death in some instances, for the vaccine to prevent these measures being required. That is what will really protect our elderly and infirm. A vaccine that ensures this virus can become water of a dust bath. We're sure, Mr. Speaker, that the vaccine will arrive in Gibraltar in the first week of January. Mr. Speaker, that is what is going to be the real game changer. The sun begins to rise brighter and earlier than from today. At least upon the solstice, at least the solstice, we will find ourselves at the bottom of the mountain that we are together called upon to climb. This year, today, the shortest of days will also be the hardest of days. And with each tomorrow, there'll be, I have no doubt, no winter of discontent, but the winter of the advent of the vaccine that will wake us from this country. I have today a singularly unwelcome responsibility of speaking words that I simply could not have imagined ever having to say in even a lifetime of public service. I'm here today to set out a new series of restrictions which, as ever, will heavily impact on the expectations and aspirations of our community at a time of year when any limitation on dealing with our friends and loved ones feels the most cruel. And let me assure you, Mr. Speaker, and all members of this House, that if any of the measures we have taken so far, as well as those we are announcing today, could be avoided, they would be. But if they cannot be avoided, it is my responsibility and that of my government to take these measures, and we will not waver in doing so. As your government, we are shouldered with the responsibility of balancing all these many and varied, sometimes contradicting demands in the community. I know full well that we have all lost our patience with this pandemic, but we cannot, indeed we must not, and we will not give up now. But the government's protection can only extend so far. We can legislate, and the police can enforce the rules. But a determined community is the most powerful defense for the spread of this disease. The responsibility for tackling this challenge is a fair one, and our people have the most important role to play. Together, we can defeat COVID-19. We can see ourselves through to the point where through vaccination, we can protect the most vulnerable in our community, and we can begin to live and love like we used to once more. Mr. Speaker, I know that we can do this. I know that the government of Gibraltar will get us through these very difficult times. I know that the people of Gibraltar are up to this challenge, and I call upon every one of the people of Gibraltar to rise up again as they did in the spring and summer of this year to the challenge of COVID-19. Not just this week, but as we go into 2021. Together, presenting a united front to an enemy that plays on the human frailty which makes us feel. A virus that plays on our need for human contact, for a handshake, a kiss, or an embrace. And this is said, Mr. Speaker, I have been desperately disappointed by the behaviour of some when we announced the measures that we announced on Friday. Protesting against our COVID rules is not going to convince us to undo something we did not want to do in the first place. Running up to party in Spain is not going to convince us to change rules that we have reluctantly come. But you, Mr. Speaker, may pass the protection that we are trying to put in place if you behave in this way, and you may bring the infection to people in the world. And Mr. Speaker, some of our people have to stop behaving as if nothing is happening. They have to realize that we have, in reality, to confront this virus, a virus that knows no season, knows no peace, and knows no religion. Just as Eve, the Valley, and Passover, and Hanukkah have been badly affected and restricted this year, so will Christmas be. But let us understand that we should not allow our emotions to rule our hearts on this issue. Logic must lead us to our conclusions and decisions. And with logic and science, we will make better decisions than with emotions, however heavy our hearts are going to be. Mr. Speaker, these are the hardest of times, yes. But we do have to take a step back Walter, we do not live the hardest of life. And we will look back and see these as the proudest of times so long as we stick together. Because by sticking together, we will get through these times together. And in a more angry, logical analysis, it should be clear that we are not banning Christmas. We are not canceling Christmas. We are changing Christmas. It will be a less commercial Christmas this year, but Christmas it will be nonetheless. With all these senses, and karma even in it, with more time for reflection and more time for immediate family, they were the longing for friends and family to once again be able to reunite without any control to stop it. With the people with the deputy minister attending virtually from his home, and all other colleagues also signing in by video conference, I might have been alone in the Cabinet office today. But I know we are all in this together and we are united in our community in the measures that we are taking to deal with. We never walk alone in the water. I do not have the words to fix this problem. I do not have the words that can address the concerns of so many. There are no words that can fix this problem or address all the concerns of our citizens. But I do have an unshakable belief that we will come through this difficulty. Mr. Speaker, I can end this statement with that.
The Honourable the Leader of the Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, no one underestimates how difficult hearing those words are, especially at Christmas, and in the line of Christmas, where the Chief Minister has announced, is really a lockdown. So, for the lockdown, we haven't recreated those March lockdown rules, but it has come pretty close to it. Of course, we've got to see where we were when we arrived at that point. And on this side of the house, listening to that, and although we have had a 60-minute advance warning of the measures that the Chief Minister was going to announce, and I'm grateful for that, he's done so consulted with the opposition in relation to those measures, like perhaps we've consulted in the past. In the past, we have been privy to greater scientific information. And so, therefore, it leaves a sort of vacuum of information for us to be able to judge the issues themselves. So, I've made these observations that it's difficult to make a judgment on the decision making because we don't have access to the science, which the government do. And indeed, we also have said regularly now, for some time, that there is always a need for there to be for the measures to be proportionate, for there to be proportionality in whatever decision making process, whatever new restrictions, whatever liberalizations are introduced in the context of a lockdown, and perhaps there's also a greater need to explain individual measures. So, I have a number of questions for the Chief Minister by way of clarification that perhaps we can answer. There are, of course, well-being issues also raised by some of the restrictions. When gyms are closed and people let us clean in gyms, those decisions also lead to well-being consequences. That we have discussed in this past before, and so understanding the science that leads to that measure, because they were so different to the program we've been doing before, it would be important. But stepping back from all those points, which are perhaps a bit more granular than where I wanted to start, I say this, Mr. Speaker. We acknowledge on this side of the House that in our own tracking of the statistics, it is obvious when we track the week by week statistics of COVID confirmed cases in Gibraltar and active cases, that something is certainly going on that has led to a vast increase in cases, especially in the last week. As the Chief Minister has said, and I'm not going to repeat the stats that he has called out himself, but I was quite struck when, in our own internal tracking of it, that we arrived at the beginning of September, not far off 285 cases. and we are now at 1,200 BCT. So there was an effect about 285 cases in the first 6 months of devoted wrestling with the virus, and in the last 4 months we've had 1,000 cases, and in particular 300 in the last month or so. And that is due to a number of things. That what they are is the Christian speculation, whether it is perhaps a more virulent virus, or perhaps whether it's a degree of assimilation stroke complacency that roots in after people get adjusted into a new normality and combined with perhaps the idea, because we've had the announcement in the last few weeks that the vaccine is coming, and therefore people think it's okay, it's all around the corner and everything will be resolved. It's difficult to put our finger on what the causes are. Perhaps the government is in a better position, or certainly they should be in a better position than we are in terms of assessing causes. But it is clear from the statistics, as we share it, as decision makers share it, that there has been a very marked increase, a record number of active cases today, a record number of people in self-isolation today. We have only had the number of people in self-isolation has only exceeded 1,000 in the last 2 days. Previous to that, we've had them in the hundreds. And so that's quite significant too, because it can have an effect on the number of positive cases as we go forward. And it's easy to see that when you are projecting where the community could be in a few weeks' time, that unchecked, these statistics can lead us to a very, very grim position indeed. And one of the most powerful things that the Minister for Health said to me in a phone call the other day when he rang me about the decision to make progress, which I thought was very powerful, was the fact that because of the incubation period, if measures were not taken, of course, you're going to then find the intermingling of family members who have socialized actively for a week with the more elderly members of the community on Christmas Day, because you're banned in the middle of Christmas when the incubation period is fixed. So that, I thought, was powerful as an indicator of why it was necessary to look at taking precautions. In terms of clarifications, we would ask the government to give us better visibility on the signs, the projections that have led it to make these decisions. We know, of course, that there is a big increase in confirmed case people. Luckily for now, not in the case of hospitalizations. That is a good thing. But I wonder whether there has been any discussion with the experts in relation to that. The Chief Minister has talked about the new strain. I'm not going to ask him too much detail on the new strain, if it gives rise to sensitive issues. I'm happy to have a discussion with the Chief Minister on this to have to discuss. But I did note, before the Chief Minister started his announcement, that a statement of the British Prime Minister has been quoted in relation to the voter, and indeed the outcome has seen its way to the Spanish media already. I think it is important that there be some discussion on that, and for us to understand what work there has been to give that kind of speculative story, if it is story, if it is speculative, some degree of evidential grounding. And as I say, I don't want to get into detail of that. I'm happy to have a discussion if there are sensitivity on that issue before those other matters to come to people's attention. Mr. Speaker, a lot of the measures that have been announced today will, of course, fit business at the start end in a very dramatic way, in the same way as last week the measures hit business sharply by giving them almost no notice of closing. These measures do the same, and this time for quite a prolonged period. And I have to say I was slightly surprised to hear the 11th of January, and again, perhaps in 2006, that's when Israel has been defined the rationale behind the 11th of January, and whether it's got to do with creating a separate breakup of at least 14 days or 21 days or something like that, because we also talked about the 18th of January in relation to schools. But as I say, it's the business sector that will be affected sharply, and the business sector will want to know, and we welcome his statement that the government is intending to put in place a mechanism to compensate all of those who have followed the rules. The business sector would perhaps also want, and I ask him to clarify a bit more detail in relation to that, even how it is going to work. I think it may be embryonic, because the decision to close on Friday was taken on Friday, but it's important that the business community should be aware of what assistance there will be for businesses forced to close as a result of either positive COVID cases or indeed as a result of these restrictions announced by the government. Mr. Speaker, also, the Chief Minister talks about trying to get to the, we didn't use these words, but trying to get against the finishing line on the vaccine. Important also, perhaps, if the government could clarify where we are on the vaccine. We've seen that in the UK, the vaccine rollout program has commenced, although in small measure, there is, I think, Matt Hancock yesterday was quoted as saying that they vaccinated about 150,000 people, and maybe by the end of the year, half a million. But we've also seen that the EU has announced that the vaccine program will start in the EU in the 27th or 8th of May of December. Where are we on the rollout of the Gibraltar vaccine program? I know that the government has made clear that their equipment was awaited, but that was almost 2 weeks ago. So can us be told, and can the public be told, where we are on the rollout of the vaccine? The people also talked about the pressure on the contact tracing bureau, and which is also natural, as the more cases there are, the more calls need to be made, the more people want tests, and so on. Has the government looked at the resources of the contact tracing bureau to ensure that we can deliver in the difficult period to come? There has also been some news items related to this morning's press that I've asked him to comment on in relation to food supply coming out of the UK into mainland Europe, and I wonder if the government is considering consultation with the business community in respect of that. The Chief Minister has also announced the delayed opening of schools to the 11th of January, although perhaps he says the 18th of January, and I'd ask him to perhaps, and I know he said that he would announce more on the 27th of December, I'd ask him to do so as quickly as possible, because people will need to plan, especially people who work, people who need to reorganize themselves, I'm sure he will understand that. And I will express some concern on the announcement that DHA appointment will have to be rescheduled for a lot of people, and that raises concerns that they will have. Is there issues of detail on which we would ask for clarification? I will say this, however, Mr. Speaker, if you permit me, on the wider issue. On this side of the house, the people know that we have worked together in relation to battling the COVID pandemic. And we continue of the same desire, approach, and attitude in relation to ensuring that together we overcome this challenge, this terminal challenge for this community, because we are not alone. However unhappy and disappointed we are on, I say we, meaning individuals in the community, maybe in relation to individual members, I think it's also always important to take a step back and understand that this is not a Gibraltar issue, that this is an issue that is being faced by the whole world, that both the flavors of the announced in the case, or in general, or in front, and that I was the renewal of scriptures in the government has generally speaking been softer so far. This measures that comes very close to lockdown is absolutely undesirable. But it may be necessary because the time to take strategies which is necessary. We, of course, do not want any restrictions on people or in business. We want liberty. We want people to enjoy their lives. We want people to enjoy freedom, both socially and economically. But, Mr. Speaker, we can celebrate another day. We can compensate business with money, but we cannot compensate language. And so, if what the members of the attend is that they are the intersection of scientific advice that these restrictions are necessary, then we will, of course, support those restrictions. We have concerns, which I have pointed out, with the honourable Chief Minister, and perhaps he would be kind enough to answer. In a few months' time, it may be that we look back on these times and we say there were not that many hospitalizations, though the cases came down. But, Mr. Speaker, I think it's important not to fall into that temptation of thinking, of reading history backwards. We are not in a position of predicting exactly where we're going to be in 5 months' time. And it would be bold and brave and foolhardy indeed to take the risk of thinking that we are prepared not to introduce further restrictions in the interest of public health and to save lives, because we want to take the risk that it may be that in a few months' time it hasn't been so bad. The reality, Mr. Speaker, is that when you look at the preparation that was done in the first few months, the Nightingale Hospital has not been used. That has been a good thing. Within 6 months' time, it hasn't been used again. It's a cause for celebration. But who's going to really take a risk in looking to Gibraltar, faced with these numbers, and faced with the science? Only yesterday there was a leading scientist from the World Health Organization speaking about the new, more virulent strain of COVID on the BBC. Who's really going to second guess that kind of scientific advice when we don't know where we are going to be in a few months' time? Certainly, all in all, it seems to me that there is a useful clarification that if there are necessary measures, then those necessary measures require us to once again, as a community, come together and face the risks down. But what it does require is that every single member of the community has the discipline and the solidarity to ensure that this works, because if this depends on something, it depends for its success on every single member of the community understanding and respecting the measures and ensuring that we see it out because we are close enough to the vaccine that hopefully can be carried out by the spring and allow us then to celebrate another day.
Honourable Chief Minister.
I'm grateful to the Honourable Gentleman for his support for the measures that I have reluctantly brought to this council. Mr. Speaker, he is right that there is much in what I have announced today that is similar to the lockdown that we had to announce in March of this year, but there are elements which we have ensured are different. For example,
a large part of what I'm going to say today is based on strong advice rather than legislation, which we have wanted to ensure. Is the structure of some of what we do, and particularly when we're talking about what should happen in people's homes, and that's the most important into which we could put our policemen is the enshrined in law aspect of what it is that we are asking people to do. But Mr. Speaker, I think that it's important that the Honourable Gentleman says that he is hearing this in a vacuum of information. I do mirror that with what he said at the end of his speech, which was a reference to the scientists that he saw on a BBC television broadcast. The science isn't very different when the Honourable Gentleman is watching it, from Professor Whitley announcing down the street and analysing his strain, and when he's hearing in Gibraltar what that new strain might be, or indeed when he's seeing the increases that he is plotting for himself in the information that we are making public, or the way that we are seeing those increases, and we are therefore predicting based on the analysis that he knows that he would have done, the same analysis that he did with him in the earlier part of this year, as to where that goes. I mean, exponential growth is exponential growth, and epidemiology has not changed. Doing the analysis that we're doing in March and the analysis that we're doing now, if anything, knowing that he knows that there is potential, not just in the United Kingdom, I think it's terribly unfair to say, well, it's in the United Kingdom, but in Europe, this new strain, which from the United Kingdom they identify as having been imported from Holland, that is to say, from the continent, from the numbers that simply going to be going in one particular direction. So I would welcome his support while gently pointing to him that it's hardly in a vacuum that I am seeking his support. I'm grateful that he's got in touch with me this morning and we were able to have the last minute that I was frantically trying to ensure that I had my word written down in some form that we could then make available to the media. I was able to share with him the ideas that COVID president this morning had proposed to the cabinet and that the cabinet had this morning agreed with the state. So, in the context of coronavirus, a lot of the science is in the numbers. A lot of the science is in the numbers, the growth of cases leading to that percentage which is likely to lead to hospitalizations and that percentage which is likely to lead to safe living. Speaker, then the Honourable Gentleman set up the test of proportionality, which is the test that, as he knows from the exercises that we did together in March and April, is the test that I apply to all of the measures in the cabinet when we're being asked to do these things. Broadly, just to remind the House and those who may be watching, there are constitutional rights and freedoms, and those constitutional rights and freedoms cannot be infringed unless there is a law that provides for them. And in many instances, those laws can only provide for them in the interest of public health or public security. Now, the framework of the Constitution, I know the Honourable Gentleman is one of them, we have seen from the earlier iteration of the Constitution, indeed from the part of the human rights in Europe, that public health exception is one of the exceptions. It's no secret to all those who are lawyers in this chamber, but it may be interesting for those who are not to know that one of the things that you need to study when you're a lawyer is what the meaning of that public health exemption is about, what it's for. There haven't been great public health eventualities in Europe or in the United Kingdom in the past few years. You had certain mouth disease, you had SARS, but they did not lead to lockdowns of prohibited freedoms in the way that we have seen. Those who were framing the post-war conventions were looking at what happened during the Spanish flu. They look at what they might have to do in some eventualities. Well, Mr. Speaker, I think that there will be many more legal experts on what the public health exemption means in charters of fundamental rights now after coronavirus. But that is what gives us the ability to legislate and do these things. But we can only do so on the basis of the public health exemption if the things that we propose to do to deal with the public health exemption are proportionate. And so, Mr. Speaker, it would not, and I don't mean for one moment to bring levity to the subject, but it would not be proportional to do certain things in the instances of avian flu and certain mouth disease. There were cowls on those who were potentially carrying the disease.
you'll never be able to go over the test of proportionality on that. And the right to life does not admit of a public health exemption. So you've got to understand that what you're doing is based on ensuring both that you have the public health exemption available to you and the proportionality hurdle is one that you can get over. And the Honourable Gentleman knows that that's the test that we went through at the time that he was not in Cabinet as a Minister, but with us in Cabinet to make decisions, and not. And now it's not the hurdle that we have put these tests through in order to ensure that we could take the measures. But then, Speaker, as he rightly says, on the first point, I put it to him that the vacuum of information is contradicted by his own statement in respect of what he's doing on the new programme, I think he said. And on his second point, which is the proportionality point, I think he contradicts himself also, Mr. Speaker, by saying that the numbers demonstrated that we would be heading for a very grim situation if we didn't act. And I don't mean to contradict in a negative way, because I think that he is rightly juxtaposing all of those things if we were ourselves in order to be able to do that careful balance that led us to these conclusions. So, Speaker, the other gentleman asked, what is it that gave rise to this increase of infection when you were doing so well? Speaker, I confess, I was very pleased when I was seeing the numbers come down as they were coming. I was really hoping that we were going to find ourselves with very few infected as we went into the Christmas festivities. And 6 days ago, we were with very few infections as we came into the Christmas festivities. But if you go back 5 days to 10 days before then, which is when the lectures were happening, which led to the increases, Black Friday, the effect of people going off to Spain immediately, but Spain lifted the controls between provinces, and going off shopping there, perhaps congregating in huge numbers in restaurants and not keeping the rules in Gibraltar and in Spain. All of these things, you can compare to the things that will have led, together with potentially this new strain in Gibraltar, and in my view, also probably in the whole of southern Spain, as I've said, in the whole of southern Europe, indeed the whole of the continent of Europe, and that is what is leading to this sharp increase in the numbers of infections. And people first responsibility is to figure out you cannot legislate for them. You cannot legislate for them. And therefore, this is the effect. And it doesn't help, Mr. Speaker, that people run off in speculation in many directions on social media. And I think, as we have insisted in the context of the period in March and April, I think it is fundamentally important that people understand that we will give them all of the information that we have. They don't have to spend their time wildly speculating about things. So if somebody passes away with COVID or from COVID, they will be told from us. If the numbers rise sharply, they will be told by us. If there is a new strain and it's identified in Gibraltar, they will be told by us. And I think it's very unsatisfactory, Mr. Speaker, that before I got up and made the statement I made in this House, the Prime Minister's official spokesman in Downing Street in the United Kingdom has confirmed it. When we have, of course, provided that information at a public health level, not for it to be widely disseminated before it's even understood in Gibraltar, but I will accept that it's possible that the timings of statements might have been misunderstood, and that people thought that the timings were given in DMT rather than 3 years to when the announcement would be made in Gibraltar, and in the context of the way that the United Kingdom supported us in the coronavirus, I will, for one moment, not believe that there is any real, just an attempt to get information out in the right time frame. But there is the evidence that we were going to tell everyone in Gibraltar that we knew that we had one case when we had identified the case, etc. But I think it is absolutely important that we do bear in mind that people need to stop putting themselves into a keyboard frenzy of issues and look at the information that is being provided by the government. There's the idea that there was an emergency cabinet meeting in Gibraltar on a Monday morning, which is being propagated on Facebook, on Twitter, and by WhatsApp yesterday with such fury that I must have got it from 30 different sources within the same 5 minutes when there was a cabinet meeting. Every Monday, and our cabinet meeting got that Monday had been set last Monday when we rode when the previous one. I do hope, Mr. Speaker, that people do understand that they have absolutely no need for that sort of provision. They need to be, is to be responsible and act responsibly. That is what is going to happen. And I do, Mr. Speaker, appreciate the Honourable Gentleman's support in that respect. As we go into this difficult period, Mr. Speaker, because we're going into more controls, we're going into family situations, you know, I do think it is important that people do understand that sometimes the behaviour that we're seeing on social media does enable them to actually lose contact with the truth. Social media is not leading to more information being available. It's leading to more disinformation being available, and that genuinely worries me, because the government is putting out the message of how people should act and how people, in some instances, where there is registration, must act. And then there are some people who are not assisting the cause of this parliament in ensuring that we try and bring down the infection. It's remarkable, and I must just pause whilst I answer the Honourable Gentleman, that I have seen over the weekend, all I've seen by WhatsApp Messenger, Facebook, Twitter, in some instances where people allow themselves to run away with emotion and not logic, is lying that people want others to believe, lying about things, lying about people, lying about meetings, lying about politicians, lying about the relatives of politicians. I mean, additionally, they're really quite knowing that they're coming to vote, that they're felt that this is the right way to go through this very difficult period. What they are doing, Mr. Speaker, in my view, in my respectful opinion, is destructive. It is destructive of a community like to vote, and it's not going to assist us to get through this difficult period unless we get a difficult. Mr. Speaker, the public therefore will know that they will have the information on how many people are in ICU, if any, how many people are in the hospital, if any, how the numbers are rising, how the numbers are falling, in the daily information that we send to all news media and their honourable members and members of the public. Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Gentleman then also raised the question of whether we have had discussions with experts. I hope I have dealt with that point by telling him that we had a COVID tracking on this morning, which was attended by the Director of Public Health and attended by all other members of the COVID tracking group. We were able to challenge all of the propositions that were put in order to be able to get to the bottom of the scientific thinking. And that's how we've made those decisions. Look, I know that the guys who own gym won't be happy that gyms are closed. And I know that the guys who own restaurants will be happy that restaurants are closed. So we're saying that we're going to make good their losses. So I do hope that you understand that as the Honourable Leader of the opposition has said, and I entirely agree, we can make good those losses. It is, at the end of the day, pure economic loss. Whilst the damage that will be done to if we don't act is something that we would not be able to provide for. Mr. Speaker, in that context, when we have announced the help for the business sector in particular, it would be for the business sector that's directly affected. So I've talked about the Catering Association. I've already provided the Catering Association with a form, which is the sort of form that we have asked them to provide arms to them to look at how we assess the loss that we've seen suffered. I said already in the course of my prepared remarks that I'm seeing the chairman or president of the Great Station Association at 6 o'clock this afternoon, so we'll be going through all the issues with members of his committee also. When he said that he was surprised that I'd set out the 11th of January as the date by which bars, restaurants, and other catering establishments will open again, I'd like to just ask you to look at the calendar. That puts us almost 2.5 weeks away. The sort of circuit breaker that we might expect 3 weeks, but I don't discard that it may have to be longer. Because I could just commit myself to saying, because I understand from the case of the situation, that you know, after the 2nd of January, business isn't entirely brisk, and so therefore, this will be the best part of the year to ask them to down tools, and indeed many restaurants down tools in that period anyway require staff to leave in that period. We are going to be putting in place a mechanism to cover losses, and so therefore, I do think that we have really addressed that and will be addressing it in greater detail in keeping with the commitment that I've given and in the meeting that I'm going to have. So I'd say this is for those reasons that the scheme is not embryonic and that we are already developing
quite so considerably, and everything is developing further. Of course, for all those who have complied with all our rules and codes, we can't have people who waive their rules and codes and coming to ask you for benefits. Mr. Speaker, waive the citizen line on the vaccine, and the Honourable Gentleman's office gives some clarity on when the vaccine will be here, etc. I think I've given that clarity in my prepared remarks. I said it will be here in the first week in January, and I understand that we'll be seeing the vaccine arrive on the 7th of January. The equipment, if you will, for this vaccine is the ability to keep the vaccine at minus 70 degrees centigrade. That, I understand, is not in Gibraltar, about to come into Gibraltar. But in any event, we have the capacity to keep enough of the vaccine that will be arriving from the United Kingdom in the first phase already in Gibraltar. So we have minus 70 degrees figures to the extent that we will be receiving the doses in the early stages. Of course, the big breakthrough that we're all waiting for, Mr. Speaker, is the approval of the AstraZeneca vaccine. Because it's that vaccine which will be easier to transport around the world, easier to produce, and will very easily reach the overseas territory, etc. And Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Gentleman gave the right figures, those are the figures that I have, 350,000 vaccinations in the United Kingdom, 500,000 by the end of the year, in the context of a population of 66 million. The problem that there has been with this vaccine, the Pfizer vaccine, is that the United Kingdom has not got anywhere near the amount of doses it expected to obtain by this stage in the game because of production problems and distribution. Mr. Speaker, so I think I have given the information that I have in respect to the vaccine, believe me, nothing could make me happier than to have more information as to when, with the arrival of the vaccine, we will be able to start the process of vaccination. We've already, I think, said something about who will be first in this case. And of course, the key issue here is those most vulnerable. Once you've got those most vulnerable covered by the vaccine, and those are included with those most vulnerable, you're really starting to make an inroad in things, and you're really also starting to lose that element of proportionality in the analysis that I was doing earlier. So if the most vulnerable, who are the most likely to suffer the worst effects, have been vaccinated, then your public health excuse for interference with fundamental rights and freedoms starts to be less legitimate. You have less of the proportionality argument on your side. And I trust you and I will probably be able to agree that as we reach down the ladder of the over 70s, the over 65s, those who are immunosuppressed, etc., being vaccinated, we then start to lose legitimacy in having in place any of the sorts of restrictions on freedom that we would have. Because the contact tracing bureau has been bolstered by an additional 35 people going into 111 and some of the other additional systems that we have. We're very conscious of the need to add capacity there because we're looking at the numbers of people in self-isolation. You can imagine that is, if you work backwards, the number of people who have to be run. And I, at home, was run for my son, Mr. Speaker, by a lady from the contact tracing bureau, Debbie, who I happy to thank her for all her work and all the work of all the people in the contact tracing bureau, late in the evening. The deputy chief minister yesterday was run very late in the evening as well. And Mr. Speaker, I know that we have a group of people there who are working dedicated, knowing that they are the front line of test-trace-isolate, which is the peace temperature in every country. And they are doing a magnificent job, and we will help them as far as we are able with any resources that they need. We've already bolstered with 35 those who are in the 111 CCB and so this morning. Because a further aside on the way that people are going slightly demanding when it comes to numerology, the Deputy Minister has not yet had his sample taken at the drive-through yesterday when my phone was ringing telling me that the Deputy Minister was positive. So either there is somebody out there who has a phone app that enables them from a distance to know who is positive or not, or there are just people wildly speculating. And sometimes speculations are not right. Because in the evening, when the lab had assessed the sample and they had called him, the deputy minister in the media had been asking since 5 o'clock. So they thought that he was positive from them. This is, I mean, this is just part of the ridiculous aspect of how some aspects of our science are isolated. The question of food supply from the United Kingdom is really one that has developed in quite a remarkable fashion. I remember watching yesterday as France imposed these controls on the canal tunnels, and thinking that this is almost a just rehearsal of the Brexit, and at the worst possible time, when already Dover was getting really congested with lorries, hence it's becoming impossible to traverse this morning. On the Today programme, they were called for hauliers not to try and make their way down to Kent. So this is a very difficult situation indeed. And I come back to the point I made in this house before, in the context of Brexit, not in the context of COVID, which is that the government's obligation is to ensure that there is food and provision in Gibraltar, and to ensure that we are able to provide for that to enter Gibraltar. We cannot act in respect of what is happening in Dover and in Calais. We are in contact with all of the food suppliers in Gibraltar. I know that they are making alternative provision for the arrival of foodstuffs for their shelves, even if it's not their own branded foodstuffs from other places. And so in Gibraltar, there is absolutely no need for any kind of buying whatsoever. Although, Mr. Speaker, as a Gibraltarian, I am fully aware that the 21st, 22nd, 23rd, and 24th of December are panic buying season every year, Mr. Speaker. So I won't put my advocacy skills at the level that I might think that I'm able to persuade people that on top of it being the 21st, 22nd, 23rd, and 24th of December, the year of COVID controls and breaking about to happen, they are likely to go out and stop less. But I implore them to only stop for what they need and not as if there was not going to be toilet paper, which is the other end of this equation, or food on the shelves during the course of the next few days, because we are going to be absolutely properly provisioned without food problems. Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Gentleman asked me to say a little about my talk about schools coming back on the 11th, maybe 18th, more likely for January. Well, that again is about circuit breaker, it's about the arrival of the vaccine, it's about how we can bring all of these elements together. I know, Mr. Speaker, there is nothing that could make grandparents happier in Gibraltar than to know that they can once again go to collect their grandchildren from school or receive their grandchildren at home. And I hope that we'll be able to see all of these moving parts come together around this period of time to try and see whether we can lift all restrictions. And you know, we don't know where we're going to be next week with the numbers of infections. We don't know where we're going to be the week after. And as I'm often told in COVID happening, the virus is usually 2 weeks ahead of us. If we're seeing today, usually what happens 2 weeks ago. So I'm just being very cautious about that. And in fact, the Honourable Gentleman has repeated the words I used. I said, the parents should be planning so that they know that they may have to keep their children at home between the 11th and the 18th of January as well. So the safe thing to do is for parents to plan that school is more likely to start on the 18th than on the 11th, and it will start on the 11th if we can start it on the 11th safely. But it is not certain that school will start on the 11th. It may be that school will start on the 25th. Or later. And I do hope that we don't go through that eventuality, but it is impossible to give certainty without being misleading. And I don't intend for a moment to be misleading. I intend to discharge the obligation I set for myself that people will get all of the information from us. And I'm saying we hope the 11th, we will, at the very worst, hope for the 18th, that we are realistic and know that it may be the 25th or it may even be later. And we will plan ourselves to have the mechanisms in place to be able to give education from the 11th, even if it's not education in person. Mr. Speaker, in fact, although that's the decision that has been made by COVID happening today, and the advice that the Cabinet accepted this morning, and it's not emergency meeting, it was, in fact, as I was coming to the house, exactly the thing I heard the First Minister of Scotland say as I was getting into the lift to come down to give my own address. So I think this is likely to be something that we are going to be developing in the same way in the United Kingdom and possibly in other parts of Europe as well. on due to appointments, as the Speaker of the Honourable Gentleman is echoing my own view that it's very difficult to tell people who have appointments for matters unrelated to COVID that their appointments are going to be cancelled, but unfortunately it is the reality in which we find ourselves, and we need to ensure that we can stand down from the major incident as soon as possible so that we can go back to normal operations in the UK as soon as possible. And the only way we will do that, Mr. Speaker, is by ensuring that we control the infection now so that we can go back to normal work as soon as possible. Again, if I may say so, there is a great demerit in having to do these things over Christmas. We are not doing these things because it's Christmas and we think that this is a final period in which we can do it. I've shown the analysis that we are having to do it because this is the way that the numbers have moved. But in the context of the DOJ, a lot of procedures would not have been set down for these weeks because of the Christmas and consultants are away, etc. And therefore, it is probably having less of an effect than it had in March and April, although, of course, the effect is now cumulative because of what happened in March and April. And we're therefore very concerned to ensure that we go back to normal operations in the DOJ as soon as possible. Speaker, finally, I can only start 100% agree with the Honourable Gentleman in respect to his statement relating to liberty and freedom. As I said before, and in fact I think I said it alongside one of them, just come on this when we offered a joint press conference, and in politics because I'm committed to the cause of individual freedom. I believe that the defence of the fundamental rights in the Constitution is something that every member of this House has in common. We would very, very exceptionally interfere with those rights, and we would do so with a heavy heart and not wanting to keep those restrictions in place for a moment longer than is necessary. So, Mr. Speaker, this is what is required at this time based on a thorough examination of the scientific advice provided to the government. And, Mr. Speaker, if we are wrong, if history looks back with better scientific advice, or with tested scientific advice that we ourselves would not have done, if we are wrong, let us be wrong in the cause of reasonable prudence, and let us not be wrong, Mr. Speaker, in the abject failure of recklessness and negligence. And, Mr. Speaker, with that, I thank the Honourable Gentleman for his support for the meeting.
The Honourable Marlene has done that on.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. The Chief Minister will find that me and my party support the restrictions announced today in light of the recent and very worrying spike in COVID-19 positives. A rise that is unprecedented and paints a dreary picture indeed for the festive season and the start of the new year. I would like to say more, Mr. Speaker, but I cannot make more in detail observations regarding these measures without access to data beyond the few statistics shared by government in their daily update. This is where I would spell out the first of my several points of clarification, Mr. Speaker. It would be important to understand the whole picture, and for that we would need answers to some key questions. Firstly, for example, do the added positives correlate to the sharp increase in testing, or is the true independent rate of positive numbers also going up, and obviously it's so by how much. Further, Mr. Speaker, how is it that on the matter of the new strain of COVID that we have found out through Sky News and other media outlets that it's spreading the water rather than public health informing us? I do recall the Chief Minister mentioning something to that effect just a few moments ago about Downing Street before us, but I think that if we did know about this days ago, or weeks ago, we could have exercised some caution in order to limit the spread. On that front, Mr. Speaker, could we execute further tests to determine to what degree or how much of this more contagious strand of the virus has been imported from the UK in the past days? And in light of this information, Mr. Speaker, a way to limit arrivals from the UK of travelers to help bring down this new variant down to a minimum. Also, Mr. Speaker, I cannot stand today without reminding the Chief Minister of the many objections raised by me and my party throughout the pandemic. We have protested the mixed messaging, the lack of examples coming from government, and the insistence God from last spring. All these inconsistencies, Mr. Speaker, have been picked up by the general public, making them more skeptical and less likely to comply with regulations. It has also made the job of policing and enforcing these measures a real minefield for law enforcement. This government, of course, and happily so successful at keeping mortality numbers low, is responsible for creating an extremely conflicted culture regarding COVID prevention, and this puts us at a severe disadvantage if things were to suddenly take a turn for the worse. And, Mr. Speaker, on further point of clarification, I feel duty bound to ask, does the Chief Minister deem it appropriate that our Director of Public Health, one of our leaders in this crisis, be granted leave when we are approaching the height of a second wave? He himself has declared a major incident today, in his own words, all while the DHA cancels its leave for staff. As measures are tightening, Mr. Speaker, how do we justify our own public health top dog, as it were, from being allowed to take leave and be thousands of kilometres away from Gibraltar, while other employees have cancelled their annual leave? And do we have any certainty as to the date of his return? And whilst we are brewing a second wave, I have to ask, how and why was he allowed to take leave in the first place, as numbers have been continuing to rise in the last week while he was still here? Furthermore, Mr. Speaker, given that Europe has already blocked the entrance of UK travellers, we haven't heard from the Chief Minister how exactly and in detail will this have an impact at the border. How will that materialise? What does reinforcement of terms quoted directly from Spain actually mean? People with homes, people who work here and live over there, how will this materialise for them? And lastly, Mr. Speaker, I have to ask, is government finally going to use this time for when schools are off to recondition these schools to make them safer and properly develop online classrooms, something that has been forceful since the first lockdown? Because I know that the Chief Minister just made a fleeting mention of the sources, but how thorough and encompassing will these new platforms be by the 11th of January? Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Mr. Speaker.
I think that the Honourable Lady has said that more or less the increase in these infections is the fault of the government, and that we are sending messages to explode. And I think that she probably wanted to say something and has decided that that's what she was going to say. Because I don't think that it's possible to penalise the way that the government has acted in respect of the contract and suggested there has been a mix of pieces. But if one spends some time looking at the reaction to the government, some people are saying that the government is doing too much. And some people are saying that the government is doing too little. So I suppose, Mr. Speaker, the government could be therefore doing just about the right thing. And the other lady is one of the people who spent a lot of time saying that we're doing too little. And we are often entreating everyone to wear masks at every stage of this. We thought very little of any worthwhile analysis to the case. Why do I say that? Just in the context of the first remark that she uttered, she demonstrated a failure to analyze the information that she's been given. She asked whether the increases are genuinely because of the new strain, or is it that the increases are because there is more testing? Well, because she has been dropping the number of tests versus the cases, and obviously the leader of the admission has said that he can't be true. She would assume that we have fixed the very high numbers of tests about 2 months ago. And that about 2 months ago, we saw numbers up and we saw numbers all the way down. So, on 1,000 tests, all of which is information which is made publicly available, on 1,000 tests, we had 7 positives a week and a half ago. On 1,000 tests, we had 60 positives a week and a half ago.
and on 1,000 tests, we had 28 positives on Saturday and 33 on Sunday on 460 tests. It's got nothing to do with the number of tests. The spike is not related to more tests, which is the first one that you made. And it's obvious what they want to see. All they need to do is follow the information that is made publicly available. And then they will not commit the sin of thinking that they can bring an explanation to the numbers of cases increased based on the numbers of tests, because all of that information is available. And this is what we need to do. Why is it that the global the government knew days ago about this new strain being present in Gibraltar, that we've had to hear about it from Sky News? Mr. Speaker, I don't know why you said that. I don't know if you didn't want to not read the paragraph that you had meticulously written, because I have just explained it. I have just explained it. I was coming to the Parliament to make the announcement. The United Kingdom knew I was coming to the Parliament to make the announcement, but I believe that they must have got wrong the timing of my announcement, thinking that I was making it at the time that they were making it, but in season two. No, the Central European time. Because this new strain that we're talking about, which we talked about knowing about last week, the Prime Minister, in sort of a similar attack by some of the people in the set of his COVID, the anti-COVID measures group in the Conservative Party, has made clear that Downing Street was made aware of the existence of a new strain late on Friday, which means the Prime Minister was doing on Saturday. We understood that from the statements made publicly on Saturday. We analyzed ourselves to speak out with the information that we have, and we received the information in our health department late on Sunday, and I was given the information this morning. Public health reports, I shared the information with Public Health England. Public Health England shared the information with 10 Downing Street. And knowing that I was making this statement, they clarified that position as well in relation to this issue, thinking that I had already made a statement in Parliament. What is she doing suggesting that we're keeping information from the public when she's just been told that in the article I've given to the Republican Commission? And in the statement that I've made, she's fearing those who want to believe that the government is not telling the truth. When the government is telling the truth, the first thing they have to do is, indeed, I hesitated, Mr. Speaker, to commit a statement on CRS visitation being cancelled before I came to the court. Why? Because then I would be accused, as one of the ladies has done in the past, of not making statements in this house. But I made a decision that the Minister for Health and Justice and Over the Care was right to press me to release that statement, because people were making arrangements, they were being tested, and they were going to go to see their relatives this evening, and we had to tell them as soon as I could. As soon as we could, sorry, as a government. And so, without giving any disrespect to this house, I allowed that statement to go. But otherwise, I'm told that I need to make statements in this house, in particular, on something that is important. I did not commit that a DHQ statement where the major incident was being announced would go before I came to this house to declare that we had made the major incident. But the other way, I just ignored what happened. Said, look, I heard from my WhatsApp contact that there's a major incident being declared in the DHQ. How dare you not have told us before? The public now knows that you're telling the truth. The public didn't give me enough time to get here and tell them in that case. So, Speaker, the other lady needs to put this thing in context. And in the case of flights from the United Kingdom, I have just made an announcement which she continues to ignore. I just made an announcement about requiring people to have evidence of a negative PCR test, or have a test at the airport in Gibraltar when they arrive because of these issues of the new strain. What we're not going to do is get flights from the United Kingdom. Because the United Kingdom has not stopped our flights or brought down our air corridor despite our numbers being high. And so we've actually taken a way that we've been keeping with wanting to work with the United Kingdom on these issues. Because it's also abundantly clear to me that this prayer is not just in the United Kingdom, it's creating for the poor in Europe. What you've got to have is Eurostars meeting until midnight last night, and then pretend that Europe is not going to be in any way affected because you stop praising because of sudden flight. When the early evidence suggests that the strain came into the United Kingdom from continental Europe, it came into the United Kingdom from continental Europe, it's spreading in continental Europe as well. So, the algorithm needs to be understanding as well of what she does in the context of this political moment, because this is a political moment. The vaccine is coming from the United Kingdom. It's coming from the United Kingdom to Gibraltar at no cost to Gibraltar. These are relationship issues which are fundamental, Mr. Speaker, and are important. So I don't accept, Mr. Speaker, that there is an issue of messaging which finds us where we are. Because will the Honourable Lady care to analyse the reverse of the point that she's made? Will she give us the credit for having done a magnificent job, given that she says that they're doing a terrible job, a magnificent job, on the day that there were 16 positives declared? Of course, three positives declared. Is it that our mismessaging is responsible for those great results? Or not? Our mismessaging is only responsible for the staff increase now. It doesn't stand up to scrutiny of the logic, Mr. Speaker. And I do genuinely think that the other lady lets herself down and she tries to do the politics of the system. She is so good that she does the politics of the better. Broader vision of things, but when she tries to play the populist game, she's just not cut out for it, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, there is no conflicted culture on COVID prevention, that is just not true. And I don't think it's fair that you are the lady to pretend that that has happened in any way, shape, or form. And then the one lady to fall into the trap of bringing to the House a social media bugbear like the lead of the Director of Public Health. I think it's also a little bit of perception that the government does not comment on the leave of any public servant. I'm not going to comment on the leave of any public servant. In some ways, I'm not going to comment on the absence of leave of a public servant who may have been in this station repeatedly for a considerable period of time. But I will say this because one of the ladies should know that the deputy minister is not on leave. And he was present in the same way during COVID starting in today as all other persons who were present on COVID starting in today. And I made the point in my prepared remarks to say that the Director of Public Health has been present in that COVID president meeting. So I assume that what the Honourable Lady managed to do, because I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt, was raised for the whole of the community to know the fact that the Director of Public Health, who he said is on leave, but I'm not going to comment on whether somebody's on leave or not, despite being on leave, was available to be in COVID president today for an extended period, has done all of the analysis of the work that needed to be done, has been in touch with me repeatedly during the course of the weekend when he was alleged to be on leave, and has additionally made himself available for further conversations this evening and in the rest of the week. Or is it that in a world where we're asking people to keep social distance, to not be in the same room, and to attend things by Zoom, it matters where the camera is to the Honourable Lady? I know I can hear you giggling, but this is not for politics, and this is not a laughing matter, Mr. Speaker. This is too serious for that. I think we could break out into complete reality now. On something that's serious, on something that the message that we're having to say, because he has taken a point which is just frankly beneath us all at this moment facing our community. He is, Mr. Speaker, he knows I have great affection for him. He is better than the point that he has made today. Mr. Speaker, the other lady says that she is not fair from the Chief Minister anything on what the reinforced measures at the frontier are going to be. What are these going to be, she says? Why do we have to hear from Chinese about these things? Well, Mr. Speaker, I made the point in the context of my prepared remarks that this is going to happen. She only heard from Chinese if she was reading Chinese at the same time as I was speaking, because the Mongolia tweeted that there were going to be additional measures after I don't think are known even by the people who are going to impose them yet. As soon as I know, I will insert the communities away. But I guess that it's very likely that we will all know at the same time, because these matters even require royal decree in Spain. And therefore, if the royal decree is global and is public, we will all know at the same time. But look, I'm sure that the Honourable Lady will know from Spanish. She has heard this from today. Look, so be it. But we are interested in a movement, Mr. Speaker, for us to be having to hear these points at this stage. And on Mr. Speaker, on online classrooms, etc., of course, we will be ready to ensure that our children have the best available online resource for the short period that we hopefully will have to be out of school again in January, if that is. Mr. Speaker, there are serious points to be made. This is a serious moment in the history of our community, a sad moment in the history of our community, and I'm very sorry to have to make these points in reply to the Honourable Lady, but I make them only because you know the points that you made, not so much in speaking verification, but in trying to obviously land equally to the point that this difficult issue made.
Suspension of standing orders, the Honourable the Chief Minister. Those in favour, those against, carried.
Mr. Speaker, I rise now to again the House. Mr. Speaker, on our absent, President Cleary and Samantha Sacramento, who are on self isolation, as I said before, we are absent. Damon Bettino and Joseph Garcia, who are both clearly positive. As we go into the Christmas break, however difficult Christmas break this may be, I know that the whole House will want to join me in wishing them well during the course of this period, that their symptoms, if they are positive, would be right, and if they're in self isolation, if they should not develop into positivity at all. I want to, at this stage, before I move the adjournment, just mention that yesterday I saw Tony Gore, MD, one of our police officers, climb MedStep 24 times for charity, for very laudable charitable purposes. And I want to just mention how proud we should be of our laudable police officers generally, given the work that they've done in such a difficult period, and all our essential services, and also in particular of Mr. Gore for the charitable fundraising events that he did yesterday. And Mr. Speaker, just in the middle of this very, very difficult period, before we adjourn, and given that they are all at home instead of being at school, given that we've got something called Brexit that they keep hearing about, and given that we've got something called COVID that they keep hearing about, I have a short Christmas message for our children. Arrangements have been made, I understand, from the Department of Housing Work Agency and other work for all to have access to homes unimpeded by the rules. Chimneys have been cleared and windows made safe. The RAF have confirmed that the airport will be open on the 25th of December as Manta has the land for fuel. Dr. Fidel has confirmed that import permits for reindeer have now been organised, and I've given an import duty waiver for anything that is carried in the display. The drive-through down at down here for COVID testing has been adapted to take the display so Santa can take a test on arrival with the necessary in case of arrival in the United Kingdom. We have a drink of milk and cookies and carrots for each of the reindeer. And it will be fine for Santa to go into each and every one of our homes so long as he keeps his gloves on and wears his mask, which is the appropriate thing to do. And the Director of Public Health has directed that he can wear his hat over his nose and mouth if he hasn't got the mask available. And Mr. Speaker, maybe when they're older, children might remember the Christmas as the best Christmas. I move that the House is now adjourned. This is Friday, the 15th of January, at 3 p.m.
Oh. I now propose the question, which is that this House be not adjourned until Friday, the 15th of January at 3 p.m. I now put the question, which is that this House be now adjourned to Friday, the 15th of January at 3 p.m. Those in favor? Those against? Pass. This House be now adjourned to Friday, the 15th of January at 3 p.m.